will not talk about anything that has to do with the atmosphere or sciences. I'll just talk about some mathematical attempts to try to understand how stochastic small scale scales interact with large scales and some and how to model those things and how to simulate them faster and what are the perils of doing all that. So I'm sure I'll disappoint the audience in from predictions and atmosphere of some sciences and all that. But
we're in your institute, so.
Yeah, right. No, I don't feel bad.
Okay. You sound like you do, though.
No, not really.
Is this a tap?
I pretend. Yes.
Is this a tap?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so basically the thing I would talk about is this hybrid and this stochastic system. So what I mean, hybrids, I mean systems that you have some large-scale flow or some large-scale partial differential equation that you want to couple with some stochastic microscopic system. And these types of questions come up in just many, many applications, and the one that which I want to focus here is cases that you have a microscopically active boundary layer or a microscopically active surface coupled with some adjacent fluid phase. And there are similar types of questions that come up in numerous other applications, like in the rheology of polymers, in solidification of alloys, and all sorts of things. I'll say nothing about all that. So here's just a caricature of different types of applications that these things come up. I mean, what I really mean is an active boundary layer coupled with some macroscopic flow, applications in surface processes, catalysis, lots of things like that. IPAM, we had various workshops on that through the years. Applications in biology, cells coupled with a lot of microscopic actions going on. One surface, another surface, another surface, and so on, coupled through a fluid. A recent model that Andy and one of his former postdocs, Wallen Kuider, constructed for tropical convection. Again, small scales are modeled stochastically and coupled to a large scale flow. And correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, this model was developed for the first time here, right? IPAM?
No.
No.
A joint work was developed for the first time here at IPAM.
Oh, okay. So it just preceded that, okay. So to give some credit to IPAM. So.
No, I know. Yes. Yeah. It's more our other stuff, though.
Yeah. So what is the mathematical setup? Just mathematical, I mean, quote mathematical setup. So what I have on the top grid over there is some discretization of a large scale flow given by some partial differential equation or ODEs in some simplified cases, and that should be coupled with a surface or an active boundary layer, if you want, that is modeled by a lot of action here, a lot of action which in this case, this action is modeled by a stochastic model. And this action is, in the types of stochastic models that I'll consider are jump processes. So in other words, you're gonna look at little particles that stay there for a while on a little microscopic location on this surface, and they may jump, perform a desorption, or they can be here on the fluid phase and jump down there, and even perform diffusion here, jumping left and right. And of course, all this can happen with interactions. So these types of stochastic models are canonical in material science. They're sort of essentially Monte Carlo simulations of particles. One of the interesting things that they have is that they are, let's say, very stochastic, right? So they have a lot of noise. So this L is what probability is called a generator, but in reality what it describes in evolution like that, it describes the evolution of any given observable. So there is something that you want to observe from the stochastic model, for instance, spatial correlations, some mean, some local mean, you can write down the evolution of this in this format. So for those of you who have a background in kinetic theory, this is equivalent to the Liouville equations. So essentially what I'll need to do is I'll need to couple the large-scale model with a microscopic stochastic model. And that, of course, poses a number of kind of obvious, in my mind, challenges, in the sense that, of course, there's a disparity in scales. Also, there's a disparity in models, right? Stochastic, deterministic. If you want to do direct numerical simulations, of course, you always have to compute averages, as you know better than me, in any system that has many degrees of freedom. So, of course, that's not easy in things like that. So definitely, one has to do some type of model reduction. Right, there are some simpler models that some coarse graining, whatever you want to call it. And of course, one could be tempted to do deterministic coarse graining, so some type of kinetic theory, something like that. Sometimes they don't work. Sometimes, as we see here, there are some examples. One is stochastic closures. Another aspect is that in many of these examples, there is no clear scale separation, so maybe one has to think of some sort of hierarchical approach. So some of these issues will come up, not all of them. Another issue that will come up later in my talk is what happens, that there's some special things are going on when you try to use stochastic boundary conditions to couple those large, you know, deterministic and stochastic. So I'll discuss some of these in the context of some very simple models. And here we go. So this is the first class of models. So this is a joint work with Andy Maida and Alex Pasakis. There are several papers, but these are some of the more recent ones. So our motivation was to try to understand the list of questions which I had over there about these hybrid systems. So how noisy are they? Is there a way to sort of look at some simple problem and try to understand how to do model reduction? So what is the effect of the noise? What is the effect of, I don't know, of interactions, of things of that type? So we came up with this very simple system that basically replaces the partial differential equation for the large scale flow with an ODE and couples it to something which is complicated. In other words, a stochastic lattice model. So this stochastic lattice model is a model that tracks individual particles. I'll show you an example in the next slide. So this has a very many degrees of freedom over here. Those two things are coupled, right? This is what I don't know, the sigma bar there and the checks over there. It will become much more clear when things sort of, when I give you a specific example. Incidentally, this type of example was considered maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, in the chemical engineering literature, some very specific case in the context of catalytic reactors. We were partly inspired by that too. Two special features of this type of model is that the stochastic part is going to enter in the ODE as an average, right in the ODE here. Now I'm going to show you another example where those two things are going to come through a boundary condition, and something quite different will happen there. But for now, look at this somewhat simpler case. This H here is an external field on the microscopic system. So you can think of this, all these particles living on this microscopic, on this microscopic lattice, and you can sort of put some external field on them that depends on the ODE, on the large scale system. So here's an example. So here's the example actually we're going to look at, although one can look at many different ones. So I'm going to look at a case, only this case here, adsorption, desorption. So what do I have? I have a microscopic lattice, and I have particles that live up there, you know, in the gas. You can think of this as a gas, and land on the surface if there is an empty site. And if they are on the surface, then they might decide to do desorption, right? They might decide to go up in the gas phase. Of course, you can think of diffusion and non-Fickian diffusions with interactions, whatever, right? So you can think of all sorts of complicated things. I'm just going to look at this simple case. It's going to be complicated enough, as you see. So if I want to set up a stochastic model, I want to tell you what is the transition rate with which one particle is going to move. So the rate with which a jump will happen. So here it is. So here's the transition rate for the desorption, for example, which is the most interesting one. That has an activation barrier here, few of X. So that's why it's called an Arrhenius process. So the particle has to overcome this particular barrier in order to jump from the lattice to the gas phase. So that barrier is defined by this formula over here, which basically counts interactions. The first part counts interactions. So J is an interaction potential and measures how this guy interacts with his neighbors. So for instance, if there are many neighbors and the interactions are positive, what that really means is that the neighbors keep the particle down, right? They're holding it. While another particle is out there, which is all alone, is gonna have much more probability to escape. So, and by the way, if I could say what sigma is an order parameter. It takes the value 0 and 1 and just says the following obvious things I'm saying over here, whether the side is empty or not empty. Okay? One can think of different species of whatever, right? Now, H of X is this external forcing, right? So H of X might speed up this or slow it down, depending on the sign of that. And that could depend, in fact, in our case, it does depend on the large scale flow. One thing about interactions, if J is strong, if J is big, so one can almost immediately see that the following thing will happen. Things will cluster, right? Things are going to sort of get pulled together and you start seeing little islands of this, right? Well, if J is sort of weaker, things are sort of going to be, won't care so much about each other. So this phenomenon is called phase transitions, and we'll see. I mean, it creates all sorts of problems and maybe some interesting things too. So now, what is the ODE? So we decided to pick to have, you know, a large class of ODEs that we were sort of interested. So we picked a number of different ODEs here that have different behaviors, and we want to check. So for ODEs that have, for instance, you know, oscillatory behaviors like the CGL, complex Gisbrough-Landau, or various types of very simple things like bistable and subtle, and even linear, even that somehow has some interesting features as you see later on. So basically, we're coupling the stochastic systems I showed you with some ODE that this is really the F of the ODE. So that's what we're trying to do with the ODE. Now we pick so the ODE is affected by the microscopic, so we have a two-way coupling. Now this is an important thing to say, right? So we have a two-way coupling in our system. So the microscopic system affects the large-scale system and vice versa. Right, so there's not a one-way coupling. In many systems there's a one-way coupling, so you do some averaging on the one scale and you move to the next one and you feel good about it, right? So in this case, it's not completely obvious, right? that this will happen. In some cases, it works.
You can feel good about it when it doesn't work too well.
Me, yes, right?
No, I mean the first thing you said.
Yes, right. So in any case, we have picked specific examples that the microscopic system will affect the bifurcation diagram of the ODEs. So, as I said later, we'll see a case that the couplings were done through a stochastic boundary condition. We'll see that at the very end. Now, I said at the very beginning, okay, so what should I do with a system like that? Should I do some sort of determinism? So what I want to do is have some reduction in the complexity of the problem. So should I do some sort of deterministic closure, or should I do something else? So here's a brief discussion on deterministic closures. One approach is mean field approximations. You saw some of them in Andy's talk. One-point statistics, different types of mean field approximations. I can think of different types, you know, more sophisticated, less sophisticated, whatever. And another approach is, which I just want to highlight one of them, is stochastic averaging. So for instance, we have some sort of time scale separation between the two systems. So the microscope, this is the stochastic one, right? So this one, I will assume that is much faster than the other one. And in that case, it turns out that you can do, indeed, you can have some sort of deterministic closure of the model. So I have a very fast stochastic system and this large-scale system which has an order one time scale. Such a setup is also for the context of the general context of Markov process with two time scales. There's a lot of literature on that, both in math and in various applications. But basically, what happens there is this: that because this epsilon is a small number, somehow I forgot to write it here. Oh, maybe not there. The stochastic system equilibrates very fast. Why? So, right? So it equilibrates very fast, and this object here, my system has a nice feature that has an invariant measure. At least in some regimes, this invariant measure is unique. So, by stochastic dynamics, have an invariant measure. You saw what an invariant measure is. I won't say what it is. You saw it in Xiaoming once talk, right? So it describes the large time dynamics of the microscopic system, and in some cases, it's unique. Right? And some cases it's not unique, right? And what's unique is called ergodic system, and when it's not, then it's not ergodic. So when this thing is well defined, that means that this system here is going to relax very quickly to this equilibrium behavior, but this is going to be, you see, parameterized by the large scale structure. So I'm putting this X over here, right? It's going to be parameterized by that. So basically what I have is a local equilibrium, if you want. Right? I have a local equilibrium which is parameterized by this large scale object over here. So all this thing will converge to this deterministic object. So my noise is going to go down to zero, just like in Xiaoming Wang's talk, right? So this is a deterministic limit, essentially. Slightly different, but essentially it's really a deterministic limit. So this is the effective equation, right? The average equation, if you want. So I will have a new ODE here, which is average over the equilibrium measure, right? So just a few remarks about that. Again, how small it came up in the previous talk, right? How small should epsilon be? Right, epsilon goes to zero. Well, it turns out from simulations, because we have no other means of testing things like that, that epsilon doesn't have to be terribly small. But the stochastic and the average would be close enough. So here's an example. But here we have a comparison of the full numerical simulation direct of the hybrid system compared to the average one. I forgot who is whom. I think that red is the average one. It's too small to tell. And of course, they agree well in the case that we have a complex Ginzburg lambda evolution. And even if this epsilon is not terribly small, but of course, if epsilon gets very big, then that's not true anymore. So, but again, applied math has this weakness, right? We have sort of our tools are not. I mean, it probably needs something else to be able to say what happens if epsilon is big. How about this F bar? Let me just say two quick things. So this F bar was this average, right? This average flux. So how did I calculate this? I want to make two comments about that. So the first one is that one can, in some very special cases, if you pick things right, you can have an analytical calculation, have a closed formula. So this is something that we took advantage of, obviously, because otherwise things are very complicated. Essentially, what you have to do here is that you have to average over this microscopic system, which has very, very high dimension. So, of course, this is very difficult to do. You could think about pre-computing it. That's not the case. It's difficult. So there is a better way, is to do a sort of an on-the-fly computational approach and calculate that. I'm not sure if Bjorn is going to talk about that tomorrow, about HMM, but this is a method of E and Enquist. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow. But calculate on the fly objects of this type, a related method to the method by Jens Kurekidis, to calculate objects of this type on the fly. Now, again, I'll go back to Xiaoming Wang's talk and some interactions there with the audience. So all these results, one has to keep in mind that all these results, these convergence results, right, to average equation. There are results which are true for finite times. Right? So this goes to zero as epsilon goes to zero, so I'm converging, so I'm losing the noise. I forgot an expected value here, right? But this is a stochastic object that converges to a deterministic object, but this is true only on a finite time. Right? At long time, this is not true anymore. at long times the noise becomes very important. And one doesn't have to go to such a complicated system that has many degrees of freedom to see that. One can really see that with stochastic differential equations, for instance, in the book by Friedland and Wenzel. And if you go at large times, there is a possibility that you're going to do something very different will happen. That's the one thing. That's the one limitation of that. The other important limitation, what I more or less mentioned, is that you need to have ergodicity for the microscopic process. And whenever you have strong interactions on the surface, you lose that. So you cannot have an average equation. There is no average equation. So let me make a point of three, right? So let me illustrate three. So here's a case that we have an ODE that has a stable state, and then it has a potential finite time blowup. So this is the blue one is a stochastic simulation, the hybrid simulation. This one is the average equation. So they sort of follow each other quite well. This deviates a little bit, goes back again. But so for finite times, it seems that they are close enough. But you keep on simulating for longer times. What happens is that the noise throws you off to this blow-up region. You go down to minus infinity over here, right, which can't be predicted by the average equation. So the average equation cannot do that. What's a genuine stochastic feature? What happens if you have phase transitions? We took an even simpler model, right? So we said, okay, let's do something, the simplest possible thing, right? Because phase transitions give trouble anyhow. So we looked at an ODE that is, for the large scale, features that's, you know, the most boring type, right? Linear. And we coupled this complex microscopic system. So the microscopic system has many, many degrees of freedom. You can think of it as a very large system of stochastic differential equations. Right? So, and the very first thing we did was something that we knew that was not correct in general. But we did it because, I mean, we're not really probabilists, so we have some freedom to do some things which are not always, you know, which are more or less correct, but not exactly. So we looked at the mean field approximation. Again, 1 point statistics. And if you look at the mean field approximation of this system, you get this nice set of ODEs, although you know that they're not always correct, depending on how strong the interactions are, how long they are, things of that type. But the advantage is that you have a set of ODEs that you can look at them and sort of think what will happen here. And it turns out that these parameters, if this beta J naught, we kept the beta because it's statistical mechanics, this beta is the inverse temperature. So, and J naught has to do with interactions. So if this thing is small, this ODE, which you can just, you know, look at its phase plane, is very boring, has only one stable state. But as soon as this interaction becomes stronger, well, you begin to look like a Fitzgerald-Nagumo system. So by that I mean the following thing. So this is the case that interactions are weak, so they have only one steady state. So yes, the system will be, so I would expect, although I know that mean field is not exactly correct, I would expect that I'll have maybe some noise, maybe a lot of noise, but more or less nothing very interesting will happen. While in the cases that I have strong interactions, this curve over here, which is the level curve of the second equation, the one that came from the stochastic system, becomes non-monotone. And then I can have three different scenarios. Right, so go back to my Murray's book or something, some book that talks about Fitzgerald-Nagumo in a very elementary setup, and you automatically can guess, maybe by looking at the mean field approximation, you can more or less guess what will happen. If you are in this regime, this is stable, this is unstable, so probably you're going to have some random switching between this and that. If you are in this regime, this is an excitable regime. So if you start more or less from some place here, you're going to go all the way out there, come back again and hit that point again, right? But the system is noisy, so you're going to get kicked out again, right? So some sort of intermittency may happen there. And if you're right here, if this was a standard Fitzgerald-Nagumo system, I would have periodic solutions. But this time I have noise, so I'm expecting some sort of random oscillations. So indeed,
what that simulation suggests. Maybe it's too much data. How are you doing?
So that's the bistable regime, right? So this is a case that I have what I would call phase transitions in this hybrid system. Now, classical phase transitions look like this, right? On a surface, let's say, or on an Ising model or a magnet or something like that. But here you have three different possibilities: random oscillations and this strongly intermittent regime. So clearly, when you look at that, you say, okay, the deterministic objects, deterministic logic will never capture that. Will never capture these types of things, right? So which are intrinsically stochastic. So you need to do something else if you want to reduce the complexity of this system. You need to do something else. But you cannot rely on scale separation of stochastic averages. So you have to include general stochasticity in the system. And this is what we try to do. And so what we try to do is to do some sort of cross-graining. So I'll tell you what I mean by that, but I just want to pay homage to cross-graining in different contexts. So cross-graining in statistical physics context and cross-graining in polymer science, they have a fairly long history. And there's a lot of work on all these things. What we tried to do is the following. We said, okay, so let's forget for a second about this large-scale flow. Right? Let's focus on the surface. It seems that the surface is driving all of what's going on here, at least in the beginning, or at least to some level. So we said, let's focus on the surface, and let's try to instead of tracking each individual particle, we will track some sort of a local average over here. So in particular, I'm going to take my lattice, I'm going to break it up into four cells, and I'm going to track, instead of tracking each particle, I'm going to track how many particles are in there. So I'll define this new observable. Well, you'll say, why this one? Why did you do something else? Right? Okay, it's a good question. So this behaves better than other things. One can really show that rigorously, but in any case. By the way, this is a work that we started here. Right?
This was started here, actually.
Yes.
At an ICAM workshop.
Right.
We knew each other before,
right,
that workshop.
Right. So with Andy and Dion Vlagos, by the way, is a chemical engineer at the University of Delaware, had a different type of motivation for all that. Motivated by catalysis and problems of that type. And also this is a later paper that is doing a lot of mathematics and a lot of error analysis and whatever. So basically our idea was to look at something like that, at a local average like that, and try to track this object. Now, as soon as you do that, you realize that this object is non-Markovian. It's not Markovian, it has memory, it has all sorts of troubles. So our take is, we don't want to mess with this at all. We just want to try to find and make a Markovian approximation to this. And we'll make an error, right? We'll make an error, and let's see if we can live with that error. So I don't say too much about this cross-grain. I just want to show you a picture. So how does the cross-grain really work conceptually, how it works, right? So basically, I have a microscopic process, and I separate it in a number of different states. These are states of a Markov chain. So what I'm doing is I'm taking a bunch of these Markov states and lumping them together. So what does it mean in the previous picture? So all the states of my Markov process that had exactly the same number of particles on one core cell, they're lumped to one chain. Right, this deck of cards, right? To this state over here. And when I do that, I'm doing an error. I'm making an error, right? So I have a lumping error, right?
Is this done in both space and time, or just space?
Good question. Yeah. So for this adsorption, we did only in space. But there is another paper where also we do it in time, for the diffusion case. So you're right. And yeah, so this is a very interesting issue by itself in time. But I won't say anything today on that. So you do the same thing with various states of the Markov chain. You lump them together, you make an error, and then you're saying, well, what's going on with this error? At long times, will it contaminate my behavior or not? So we want to make sure that at the microscopic equilibrium of the two objects also the satisfied error estimate, because you can make the wrong approximations here, and you may get wrong, and this error might add up and really give you very different results between this and that, and that's what you don't want. Also, there is a different procedure, right? You can think of mathematical different procedures by taking this deck of cards and reconstructing your microscopic process. This is very important in polymers. And there is some semi-empirical methods of doing this, and we have some sort of more rigorous ways of thinking about these things. Just a quick point on the mathematics. It's a paper that Andy mentioned. Again, makes the connection with relative entropy and information loss. You can think of this coarse graining as a process of losing information when you go from microscopic scale to this coarser scale. So what you'd like to do is that when you try to... So I'm thinking of this coarse graining as a numerical method. Right? It's a numerical method that it gives me some error. So I'd like to control the error. And one way to think of the error is think of this as loss of information, and then you can use this relative entropy object to track the error in time. And we could prove with a joint paper with Jose, who was a postdoc at the time at UMass. You can track your error and see when your coarse graining is good and when it's not. So it's good when this parameter is small, and this parameter involves the length of interaction, it involves the temperature, it involves the amount of coarse graining also, and it involves the details of your interaction potential. So I don't want to get into the mathematics of this. Let me just say only one thing. What is the difficulty of proving a theorem of this type? The difficulty is that when you coarse grain, you lose Markovianity. So you have to compare a non-Markovian object with a Markovian object. Now, my probability is not good enough to do non-Markovian objects. So what we did is that we said, okay, so we can't compare at this coarse level, but let's reconstruct and compare at the microscopic level. So that's where we use reconstruction as a rigorous tool, but of course it has all these implications in polymer science and things like that. So I don't say more about the proof. It has many different steps. I just leave it there. So let me now take this, take all that, right? So let me take all that, all this. Coarse graining techniques that we have developed, and now put them back into this hybrid model. So I will consider my hybrid model again, but I'll replace the microscopic interactions with these coarse grained ones. The microscopic model with the coarse grained one that has many fewer degrees of freedom. And let me just revisit the old examples. The one example that we did was the example that we had this blow up, right? Remember this averaging, that the averaging was working fine for a while and then stopped working? Well, let me revisit that, right? And let me see now. Now there, the averaging doesn't work, right? At least it works for a while and it stops working. So let me revisit it and redo the simulation with the coarse grain guy. And now here I'm comparing coarse grain with direct numerical simulations.
Is that convergent?
Yes. Yes. Right. You have pathwise comparison.
That's what I was trying to.
Yes. You have pathwise. We cannot prove pathwise convergence in any context, but it seems that we have pathwise convergence in simple.
We're saving a random number, well, in this case, not in the intermittent case, obviously.
Absolutely not, yes.
So it depends on which of the three cases. This one, it's pathwise.
Well, the theorem that we have is about convergence in relative entropy, in weak norms, weak convergence. Okay, we don't have a theorem for that, but the way you do it numerically is that you save there, as Andy said, you do sort of the computational analog of coupling in probability. You save the random number generators, you use the same ones. You don't rescale time, your point comes there. And you can get this pathwise convergence. So you even blow up at the same time, right? So that's good. But in reality, what we really want to do, we want to check what happens in phase transitions when you have strong interactions, when you have all these intermittent regimes that you cannot expect to have any type of pathwise convergence.
So this would be like in a chaotic dynamical system, really high positive Lyapunov exponents. You never expect two trajectories to follow each other. So now here we'll get statistical convergence.
Right. So you have to redo all that stuff. The previous thing was just for show in reality, right? I mean this is really the way of doing things. So So this is excitable regime. I'm looking here at a large scale object, right? The solution of the ODE. You see that, and I'm comparing Q equals 1 direct numerical simulations, Q equals 50 is how much I have coarse grains. So I've put 50 of them together. So basically this is like 50 squared faster, right? Q squared faster. That's why I had the estimate. Right? I had an estimate.
I missed
it. Yes. Right.
Okay, you have an estimate.
Yes. I have an estimate, but the estimate is not for the hybrid system. It's only for the microscopic. For the hybrid system is much more tricky because I expect that my coarse grain is going to be very good if I have strong external forcing. And if my external forcing goes through the phase transition point, it won't be so good. So there is a sophisticated estimate that we don't have.
But the ballpark thing is we have the guidelines, yes, and we kind of use those.
Yeah. So the guideline is the previous estimate. Yeah. And there are better estimates and better whatever. But I won't refer to them. There are better estimates for, we have better force grain techniques, whatever. But this is a good question. In fact, one can try to do some adaptivity. When you see a lot of local adaptivity, you can reduce your force grain. So in any case, so here, what you see is that, of course, the time series are quite different. Clearly, there's no pathwise convergence. So one looks at autocorrelations, power spectra, sees some reasonable agreements between microscopic and coarse grain. Same thing for the actual signal of the microscopic process, which is some sort of interesting power spectrum there. A lot of intermittence, clearly, a lot of different scales. Oscillatory regime, same deal. We're doing quite well there too. Again, I have to say that if you violate this estimate, you get wrong results. You get the mean field eventually. Everything fluctuations.
So if you go way beyond your action potential, then you're really going to make a mess.
Yeah, but
on the other hand, we speed up here 50 squared.
Yes, and also right. You speed up at 50 squared, and if you include corrections, you're allowed to go even further to the coarse grain and speed up even more. So in any case, so also this is a spatial power spectra. Again, in the case of the oscillatory regimes, you get different types of good agreements. So this works reasonably well, at least if you satisfy this constraints. So the last, how much time do we have? 5 minutes? Let me talk very briefly about what happens now if I look at the system that I have a coupling through a boundary condition. So this is a system, this is a joint work with Dion Vlachos and Alex Pasakis, motivated by a cell biology problem, but I thought that it could be interesting in a more general setup. So basically what I have here, I don't have one surface, I have two surfaces. You can think of them, each one of them has two different cells. And there is some diffusion, so particles land here, and so on each surface I have microscopic stochastic dynamics, just like the ones that I showed you, right? So but I have two of them. So particles land here from the fluid. So think of this as a one-dimensional tube or something like that, right? So particles land here and from the fluid and also leave the surface and go into the fluid. And same thing on this surface over here. And here I have some very simple diffusion mechanism, Fickian diffusion, no interactions. No interactions between particles. So what is the dynamics on the surface? Again, the same type of dynamics, adsorption rates, desorption rates. In them, the particle density of the fluid comes in because they have to land here in the fluid. So this is the fluid, right? So they have to leave and land in the fluid, and vice versa. So these types of parameters come into play. Again, there's an activation barrier, possibility for phase transitions, all that. So what is the goal here? You see here that's the possibility of phase transition. That's one simulation of the boundaries of the cells of the two surfaces, right? There is a phase transition right here. You see a jump, a sharp jump. One can do, of course, microscopic modeling. One can model the future. So one could say, well, why do we want to do hybrid, right? Why do you want to do hybrid? You can do microscopics, right? You can diffusion, you can simulate it by random warp. So sure, you can do that. And in reality, the question that we were interested in is to understand how those two cells, two surfaces, if you want, how they synchronize. So we want to understand cross correlations between them and joint PDFs and things of that type. As functions of the distance and other parameters of the problem. If you try to do that with a direct embedded simulation of a microscopic problem, I mean, forget it, right? I mean, you're going to run forever. I mean, even for a toy problem like this, it's going to take forever to do. So that's why you need some sort of a hybrid simulation to speed things up. Okay? So let's see a hybrid model. So I am inside this inside this domain where I'm going to do diffusion. Right? And how is the coupling coming into play? Comes to play through a balance of the fluxes. If I'm on the boundary, the flux here is going to be equal to the adsorption rate. I mean, there's a D here, which I missed. Adsorption rate minus desorption rate on each one of the boundaries.
But you're doing it for each lattice site?
No.
So that's how is that? That's an average thing, an average absorption, desorption, or
it is an average? Yes. So
averaged over what?
So it is. If I had space here, if I was in two dimensions, right, I had to average over one of the grids of my PDA.
So you look at the average absorption, desorption
yes.
over that.
Yes, day. Yes. So there's a bar actually here. So.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay. Absolutely. Now here's what happens. If I have phase transition on the jumps, if I have phase transition on the surfaces, I have jumps right there. This thing is essentially the derivative, if you want, of the coverage. So what is the implication of that? That this guy minus that guy, the derivative of that here is going to be what? Dirac mass. So whenever I have a jump, I'm going to have a Dirac mass. Right? If I try to do this. Right? So whenever I have a jump, I'm going to have a Dirac mass. What are the implications of this? Is that the Dirac mass right here affects all the modes. You can do this as an exercise, solve this with the Dirac mass, you know, as an exercise for undergraduate PDs or something like that. All modes get affected. So whenever you want to truncate, there's something real that you're missing on the boundary. So almost get excited. So whenever you want to do a numerical truncation and to simulate with a hybrid system, you're gonna lose something from the higher modes. So this system, we on purpose and against the protestations of our engineer collaborator, we set up in a way that's a conservative system, so that we wanted to make it very sensitive. So what happens is that because you lose something every time you have a jump, what happens is that you lose mass. And here's the loss of mass. Here's the mass on the boundaries and on the mass and on the interior. So every time you have a jump, there is some loss of mass, and of course it's a wrong simulation. Right? So this is a bad idea because of this high jumps on the boundaries. Now, inside the domain, of course, all these direct masses get smoothed out very quickly. But the point that I want to make is that this direct coupling isn't a bad idea in this case. So you do something else. So we did something that we could do easily. So the easy part was to study all these problems that we have not shown, you know, is maybe not of interest here, all these synchronizations and things of that type. But we said, okay, we're gonna replace the diffusion with coarse grained diffusion, which is again the same class of coarse grained constructions that we did with Andy and Blackhorst and earlier papers. So instead of doing diffusion with a PDA, we can do it with this coarse grained process, and that has a speed up in time. So whenever you do Q here, with the coarse grained by Q, and the figure case is exact, your speed up is Q to the fourth. So that's a much faster algorithm. But in reality, what you should be doing is to be doing a hybrid model. But your hybrid model should start further inside. Because right here, you have the Dirac masses. Right? But the Dirac masses are smoothed out by the diffusion. So close to the boundaries, we think, but maybe you should do some sort of coarse grain Monte Carlo and couple with the continuum PD further inside. So that would be some sort of hierarchical hybrid simulation. We have not tried that. But in any case, this thing works and gives all the correct predictions. And that's exact.
One thing I don't like about your original formulation is you have a length scale introduced by your numerical mesh. You put down your little squares there.
Yes.
And declared those little squares, that will be your absorption, desorption amount.
Yes.
And therefore, there's a scale introduced.
Yeah.
Scale then interacts numerically with your external solution outside. It would seem to me even physically, if you thought about this as a physical system, you would not like to have that scale there unless you could associate some physical significance to that scale.
Absolutely. So
that's not computational.
So this is absolutely something that we have played with. We have played by taking different sizes and seeing how robust this thing is. And in this simulation, actually, the average is over the entire. When you look at the cell, basically, we treat this as a system that has only the single column models. So there is only the directions are uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really have to average; it's already averaged.
But still, the object you'd like to maybe write down to begin with shouldn't have a length scale in it, unless that length scale is physical and you would write it down. Right now, the object you want to approximate has a numerical length scale.
Right. Yes, there is a physical length scale in this. Right. I mean, that's the size of the cell. This is what you mean, right? The size of that surface.
Yes.
Right. There is one, and of course.
And it should reflect your numerics, whether your numerical cells
but
are big or small relative
sure,
to that.
Sure, it does. But think about this. I mean, these jumps happen no matter what the size
of
that is.
That I agree with.
Yes.
That I agree with.
That's really the point which I want to make. That's really the point. The main point which I want to make is a cautionary point rather than a point that has a. My preferred method is this because it's exact. And here I would couple more with much more ease because here, inside the domain, I don't have jumps. So really the message, my message is that these types of couplings are very tricky, right, through boundary conditions. So I'll just conclude by saying that it seems that from these simple examples that hybrid modeling and coupling of these types of systems is tricky. It has interesting features, it's a lot of intermittence, a lot of potential, but also they can have, as you see in this latest example, some potential pitfalls. So I'll leave it right there.